One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson. Happy Wednesday to you, also known as Hump Day. The week, I can never tell, Ray, where this goes. Does the week go up from here or down from here? Downhill, uphill from here. What does Hump Day mean? I don't know.
But I think if it's going to Friday, we're going up, right?
I think so, right? Because downhill is bad, uphill is good. Whatever it is, Hump Day, we made it, Tucson. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. You're listening to the Creative City Show, where every day, Monday to Friday, at our new time of 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. Along the way, we envision, we debate, we discuss the issues and themes critical towards getting to Tucson's best possible future. And I got to tell you, I certainly hope all my shows fit that, right? That's the mission and vision. I hope all shows do that. But I think today's show especially does that. The guest interview part of the show today is with Ted Maxwell, just to set the show up and we'll get into it. He's the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. And we're going to talk from beginning to end today about a single issue. We're going to talk about the Proposition 205 on the ballot, Tucson Families Free and Together. Now, if you remember, we had one of the key organizers of that initiative, the Yes on 205, if you will, Zaira Livier. We had her on the program to talk about some of the reasons in her mind, in their mind, that this is important and why it was presented to the citizens and why it was eventually put on the ballot. And so that was we had her on the show. Ted Maxwell from Southern Arizona Leadership Council will share some additional perspectives today on some of the concerns, potential concerns and consequences should this pass. So that will be at least half of our show today, and there will be that. I think I'll also share some of my journalistic thoughts. And what I mean by that is interviewing Zaira, and I think we spent, I forget, 40 minutes in studio, maybe more. I had some questions, some things that popped into my mind. They're still rattling around in there. So we are on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. So we try to do news and talk. And so maybe the talking portion in terms of me behind the mic today will be some of my brief kind of 30,000 foot views on 205 in terms of policy. But I also wanted to share throughout the course of things a mid-level city test, a test for mid-size cities. And maybe that's where we'll begin, and we'll talk about how Tucson lines up. So that's the show. You can call in to talk with me when Ted comes in the studio in a few minutes. You can call in and talk with him about any of the items we're talking about by calling in to 790-2040. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to engage in conversation. If you haven't heard me say it before, Tucson, the reason why I come to these beautiful studios at 1030 The Voice rather than my closet at home doing a podcast is you, quite honestly, is the live local feedback opportunity to talk about real issues in real time with real people. That's why I do this show. So 790-2040 is your opportunity to call in and have a chat. Let's start here. I want to talk about a mid-size city test, a mid-size city test, metrics that decide whether a mid-size city is on the way to success or is on the way to struggle. Let me give you these four. Let's talk about it in terms of Tucson and see if you agree or disagree with these four at all or even in part. So here's a first test. A great city, a great mid-size city, has spontaneous movement, action, and initiation. The city is happening. It's bubbling. Some of this might be because of luck, some because of leadership. It's usually not because someone or some group made a master plan, it reads. But if a plan, albeit less than fully realized, fed a comeback culture of confidence, it added energy to energy and was a success. A great city has spontaneous movement, action, and initiation. What do you think, Tucson? How is Tucson doing on the first of four tests for mid-size city success? So we have spontaneous movement, action, and inflation. Would you consider Rio Nuevo a plan, more of a master plan, that fed a comeback culture of confidence? Does Rio Nuevo fit into that, for example? I've reviewed the Tucson master plan, the plan Tucson. It's about a 300-page document. Not completely sure if that would fit into this, but spontaneous movement, action, and initiation. I think we have some of that. I also think it's often disorganized. So that's number one. A great city has economic enterprise. Commerce is being constantly generated in a great city, and new commerce is being generated faster than old commerce dies. That usually has less to do with government incentives and tax breaks than a smart workforce, hence EDs and MEDs. I've never heard that phrase before. I didn't write it, but that's interesting. A great city has economic enterprise. I think this is an area where Tucson has certainly seen a little bit of growth in the last 4 or 5 years. But I really doubt there's few people who, whether they would come out publicly and say it or would say it privately behind closed doors, so to speak, would say that Tucson has a great level of economic enterprise that usually has less to do with government incentives and tax breaks. By the way, I get banged around a little bit on this show for sure, but I stand by it. I think this black and white approach to government incentives and tax breaks it lacks the nuance that is important. If you look at major tech and economic centers that are free market, capitalist, thriving, buzzing, moving, if you go back far enough, you will see that they had in their beginning stages at some point a public sector that was engaged in all the right ways and stayed out in all the right ways as well. It's not either or. Number three, it has civic enterprise. Politicians do not make a city, neither do the business leaders. But politicians who are willing to spend political capital to move the city forward are an enormous plus, as are business people who have roots in the city and care about it and give back to it. And a city with corrupt or inept leaders, public and private, will be crippled, probably decisively. It has civic enterprise. This has been a metric that I've seen a lot in cities lately. How's Tucson doing on civic enterprise? Are people, both local citizens and politicians, willing to spend political capital to move the city forward? Do we have business people who have roots in a city and care about it? I can think in my head of a couple of instances over the last 5 years where I could actually say, yes, I think we do have that. And I think it's important to have that civic enterprise. How's Tucson doing? Last, its people are optimistic. Pittsburgh never lost its optimism, its faith in itself. Neither did New York City. Both came back. Many cities did lose faith in themselves, especially in the industrial Midwest. Certainly part of New York City's comeback after years of articles asking if the city was governable and a string of hapless mayors was the election of two mayors in a row who had no doubt that the city not only would survive, but prosper. All of this is a way of saying that it is not the grand plans, but enterprise, leadership, and luck that make a city great, as well as really nice, genuinely caring people. I think in many ways, Tucson can lay claim to optimistic people. But I also sense out there, maybe you do, Tucson, I sense maybe a growing level of optimism, but I also sense a lot of pessimism. And maybe it's because of the stories not being told. Maybe it's because of decades of feeling like we're kind of just swirling but not really going anywhere. I sense in some areas of the city lots of optimism. I sense in other areas a sense of discouragement. And by the way, this was an article that came out of, it looks like, Toledo. It's called The Blade. I found it because I follow a site called Strong Towns. It talks about how to build great cities, great communities. These are the four metrics this article proposes for the success of mid-sized cities, of which Tucson is one. Spontaneous movement, action, and initiation, economic enterprise, civic enterprise, and optimistic people. What do you think, Tucson? How are we doing on those four things? I'll let you chew on that. Maybe we'll get back to it at the end of the hour. We're going to go to our first break here on 1030 The Voice. When we return, it'll be with Ted Maxwell, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We're talking Prop 205, Tucson families, free and together. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Tucson, welcome back to the program. This is our Wednesday, September 18th edition here on the Creative City Show. I am your host, Zach Yenser. In the last segment, we talked about the four-part test for the success of mid-size cities. If you heard it and you have some thoughts, hang on to those phones. Call 790-2040, maybe towards the latter part of the hour. But let me know what you think of those. I ran across those in a publication out of Toledo the other day, and I thought it was kind of interesting. But in studio with me today is Ted Maxwell, not an unfamiliar voice on this station, but the first time on this show, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Ted, thanks for coming in.
Zach, I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. And obviously, since you work so closely with Tucson Young Professionals, who's an organization we've strongly supported for a long time, I know you fairly well. And what I'm have been really impressed by is the show and how you're creating the conversation. You're not taking a specific side on anything, and you just really want to get the discussions going, and you get people talking about what they believe is important for the city. And as I've said, you're tech and talent comment, that's, we need to talk about those as much as we talk about tacos and trails is absolutely true. We too often focus on the things that most of us love about Tucson and why we're here, and that's the food, that's the environment, that's the ability to be, you can walk, take a 15-minute hike and be completely cut off from the city in the back of Pima County, or on the Pima Canyon Trail. I love that, because 15 minutes later, you can't see the city any longer, and you are really out. But that's what makes us great. Yep. But the important thing is to talk about the issues that are going to keep us great and give us opportunity. I mean, we've got an incredibly open city here. We've got a friendly, warm city. We're diverse. There's no doubt about that. We've got differences of opinions a lot, and that sometimes is our challenges that really prevents us from succeeding. So we need to find where we've got that common ground and can move forward together.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate that. That is what I try. That is what I try to do. And I mentioned to our listeners in the first segment, really my first brush on the air with this issue was with Zyra Livier, the organizer of the initiative. So to your point, this should be a forum for conversation. I've thought about in my head how to frame some of my thoughts on the proposition, our conversation. And see, I'd be curious if you agree with this. I think that in some ways it's almost policy versus priority or values, and national narrative versus local realities. In the sense of what we are dealing with on the ground speaks to an immigrant welcoming community that in many ways is accomplishing, at least I know this to be kind of your view, is already accomplishing what the Sanctuary City Initiative seeks to do. And your concern is, which is why I wanted to have you on to speak to this in more detail, your concern is that the potential consequences outweigh how far the needle would move locally on a policy sense. Is that a fair way to kind of frame the conversation?
I think that's an outstanding way to frame the conversation, because that's honestly how the proponents are framing it. If you took a look at the article that Tim Steller wrote earlier, if you think back to your conversation with Zyra, they want to tell you that you shouldn't be afraid of voting yes on this. It's really not going to change much. And the fact of the matter is, if it's really not going to change much, then why are you doing it? Why are you doing something that's going to encode in city code through a city initiative laws and changes to the laws, changes to the operating procedures of Tucson Police Department, if it's not necessary? And my belief is it's not necessary. We have a set of general orders that the Tucson Police Department follows that prohibits everything that they are saying they want. They don't want questions regarding immigration on casual contact, on contact between police and the citizens that is not directly related to either a breaking of the law or something that's going to require further investigation. And that's not occurring. The fact that they want to put in city code that you can't ask questions in schools, churches, in hospitals, on casual contact stops. Well, give the examples where those are occurring, because the fact of the matter is they're not occurring. They are not happening. The leadership of the Tucson Police Department, Chief Magnus and others, will ask, show us where it's occurring. What you're asking for is already in our general orders. It's already in the reality of how they conduct their business. And it's been stated loud and clear by the mayor and the city council that Tucson is an immigrant-friendly and welcoming city. That is why Mayor Rothschild is opposed to this. That's why Councilwoman Romero, the Democratic nominee for mayor, is opposed to this. All five of the other sitting city council members are opposed to this. The chief of police is opposed. And what people want to lose perspective on, because you're going to hear from the pro campaign that, well, everything they're saying is going to happen is only a maybe, because they're not part of federal agencies. They don't know if they're going to sign those MOAs. That's just factually misleading, because the reality is the city attorney is already on record in his memo saying that this initiative, if it's to pass, if Prop 205 passes, will be in violation of state law. And that will be the beginning of the undoing of a lot of things, folks who are avid sanctuary supporters. I mean, Tucson, think about it. Tucson is one of the bases where the sanctuary movement began 30 years ago. You don't see a lot of the folks who work in that field lining up behind the pro campaign, because they know this has the fear of completely unwinding all the successes that they've had and the progress they've made with a progressive police chief in the town who's doing a great job of balancing the needs of the community, the safety of the community, and the desires of the community when it comes to being an immigrant-friendly area.
And there's some numbers. Maybe we'll get into this in our next segment. There's some numbers that back that statement up, at least in your view. And we'll get into that. Let's finish out this segment this way. And I have a great relationship with Regina Romero. We work closely on things on the west side, and this is something that I would be very comfortable sharing with her in person. So that's my litmus test for whether or not I share the personal things on the air. You know, I gotta say, I had her on the show, and she was adamantly against this initiative for some policy reasons. Her position is in the Arizona Republic, in black and white. There are many places where she has come out strongly. I think what I was surprised about, because I'm on record, and some people listening will know because I've chatted with them about it, this was one issue where I was almost sure that she would soften on as it went on the ballot officially and as we came out of the primary. I thought that she might bring a little bit more nuance to it. I mean, let me know if this is what you're seeing. What I've seen since the primary, since this went on the ballot officially, she really hasn't changed position much, and neither have most of the city, all the city council, neither has the mayor, the police chief. Everyone from beginning to end has been very firm that this is not a good idea. We have 3 minutes, just to bullet point it, because we have time to get into these in detail. What are the reasons why? What are you hearing are the reasons why Democratic and Republican leadership in Tucson across the board are concerned about this initiative?
Well, first, Councilwoman Romero has absolutely stayed the course on her opposition to this initiative. Her talking points haven't changed. One of her major concerns is the money one, which a lot of people don't understand. They hear $125 million. Oh, that's nothing. It's a $1 billion budget. But the problem is the state shared revenue that's at risk. And if people don't think there are state legislators lining up to take this to the attorney general, and then the attorney general investigates, and oh, by the way, his evidence piece number one will be the city attorney's memo, which says that this violates state law. And once it violates state law, he's supposed to instruct the state treasurer to withhold shared state revenue. Here's the fear. If you're a new incoming mayor, or you're a current sitting member of the mayor and of the council, would you want to deal with a 25% across the board cut in your general funds? Your general funds. So all the services that are provided by the city are threatened to be cut. You know, they're not going to come in and lay off half the city, or half. Half's an exaggeration. Probably, I don't know the numbers it would take, but they're not going to come in and lay off a lot of city employees. So the financial loss of shared state revenue would be devastating to the operations and the good that the city does for all of its citizens, regardless of status, regardless of whether they're immigrants or residents, if they've lived here all their life or they lived here a year. It puts that in jeopardy. And so that is one of the things that's out there. But where we're really concerned and where I'd like to hit the bullet points of a lot of people is on the changes to public safety. There are clauses in there, and you're going to see on the ballot that it talks about limiting what TPD can do. Well, the only reason it doesn't say prohibit is because it doesn't prohibit them to it, but it requires they get agreement from folks such as federal agencies for stuff they're just not going to agree to. That is why the chief of police is vocally concerned about the loss of cooperation with federal agencies, both for investigations and for operations. And the investigations is a big piece. There are a lot of cases that without the power and the data that the feds have would not be solved inside Tucson city limits.
So just to kind of set up the next segment as we go to our first break, some of the concerns that you're hearing, that you're seeing, that you are making deal with funding for our local budget, public safety, and also what is already in place that is being followed. And just considering the opportunity costs of passing something like this that enforces in code what is already happening, and we have time to get into all of that.
As you said, Zach, if it's not going to make any changes, why do you risk any of it? I understand they don't think it's going to happen. We believe very strongly it will.
We'll be right back, Tucson. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to the show. Part two, if you will, of my interview this morning with Ted Maxwell. He's the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We could talk about a million and one things. We could even talk about what I brought up in the first segment, and that is the four-part test for mid-size city success. We could talk all day, but we're spending at least a half an hour today talking about one topic in particular. It's probably one of the most controversial items that will be on the ballot in November. It's, of course, Prop 205, the Tucson Families Free and Together Initiative, also known as Sanctuary City, is kind of what it's known by, maybe a little bit more informally. It's a citizens initiative, which means it took a certain number of signatures to get on the ballot. If it ends up being passed and on the ballot, it will take another citizens initiative to take it off. And so it's a real decision point for the community of Tucson. And today, as I mentioned, we had Zaire Livier on earlier in the summer. And I'm speaking with Ted Maxwell today about some of the potential concerns and consequences he and many others see with this initiative, including funding to the city, collaboration with safety, with public safety, and much more. Ted, if you can clarify here, the chief of police has been extensively vocal about his concerns on behalf of the Tucson Police Department about this initiative passing and becoming ordinance, if I have that correct. And it's interesting just to kind of see from a policy standpoint how things work out on the ground that currently Customs and Border Patrol, according to the ACLU, cannot conduct stops for traffic violations. They can only stop for reasonable suspicion of an immigration violation or a crime. TPD officers do not check people's immigration status in misdemeanor cite and release cases, and they don't check immigration status when it's voluntary or consensual, right? And so one of the concerns is that I've heard is that if a young woman is feeling in a sexually dangerous situation, is undocumented, wants to call the police, the goal of this initiative would be that person would feel safe to do so. The case that I've heard, the case that the chief of police is making, is that already exists.
And Zach, you're hitting all the points. That is one of the main focuses from Chief Magnus. This is a solution that's trying to create a problem. The problem doesn't exist right now. The GOs are very clear. The general orders that's in place at TPD is very clear that TPD is officers are not supposed to inquire an immigration status on casual or voluntary contact. And that includes when they're going to voluntary, when somebody calls and says, I've been assaulted, and they go there, that's voluntary contact. They're not going to raise that question. They're there to solve and determine if there's a crime. And the argument that I've heard some make, and by the way, the chief's very clear in his response, which is a public document, to the things that the pro campaign believe this will solve, that there's no, he knows of no case or example where in a voluntary contact or casual situation, it has resulted in any questioning regarding immigration status. As a matter of fact, the legal leaders of the pro campaign, those are the lawyers, and I mean the lawyers, so that are behind this initiative, will tell you that this won't violate state law because it can't. It's not allowed to. And so therefore, any 1070 things that everybody says it's going to clean up, they will still have to ask 1070 immigration questions if they meet the criteria that's required. Well, TPD is very strict about making sure that those met. 19 months from January 1st of last year till July 31st of this year, 23 times TPD inquired via 1070 questions. So when it's required by state law about immigration status during an investigation or stop. And during those 23 times, one time CBP actually came onto the scene. Only three times they even called CBP, but only one time. So there's been one instance in 19 months. Again, and in that case, guess what? They would have been called anyway because they were breaking the law. And once an arrest occurs, those questions are happening. So the chief's concern is, one, he refutes all the arguments made by the pro campaign. And the biggest issue on here is the fact of the loss of federal support. The initiative requires Tucson Police Department to obtain a memorandum of agreement signed by a federal agency prior to initiating either a joint operation, a joint investigation, or any other event that you're going to use federal agencies. And oh, by the way, that bust that occurred about a month ago, 21 folks trying to solicit minors for sexual contact, that involved 12 agencies, 7 of which were federal. So you'd have to have an MOA with all those. The problem with the MOA requirement is you're asking federal investigators and legal personnel to basically agree to give up what they are sworn to do. And that's to investigate, to question, and take action if they find something. And that's just not going to occur. The proponents will tell you, well, you don't know that. You're not a federal agency. You're right, I'm not. But I do know, and with 34 years in the U.S. military service behind me, that federal agencies are not going to enter those kinds of agreements where they give up what they're fundamentally stood up to do. And not only that, people think, well, we've got great relationships with the local organizations, our TPD does. They'll agree to that. The decision isn't made here. That is made back in D.C. by the agency heads. And there's no way an agency head's going to sign an agreement that gives up the authority that is invested in that agency. So you do that, there's potential loss of not only those operations, but more critically, the investigation. Because if you don't have an MOA in place when something tragic occurs, all the good investigative tools that you can put into place, all the data gathering, all the information is going to be gone by the time they can even address the idea of getting an MOA. And the fact of the matter is the federal investigators have a lot more power, a lot more access to databases we don't, and it's going to impact our public safety, not only to prevent crimes, but to solve crimes inside the city of Tucson.
Ted Maxwell, President and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. It's interesting you mentioned something. When I had Regina Romero here in studio, that was the one thing that I was very interested by, and it's that she mentioned is, in her view, this is an issue that is really an SB 1070 and a state issue. Her view has been, and it's documented, I don't make this stuff up, it's documented that her view is that this is important work, but only band-aids the challenges in her mind that come term with SB 1070. And if you want to fix the problem that this initiative tries to solve, it has to be fixed at an SB 1070 and state level. Before we go to a break, Ted Maxwell, what are some of the concerns that you've heard from either mayor and council or the chief of police when we talk about collaboration with other public safety entities? Are you getting a sense of what are some of the things that might be jeopardized by that MOA clause, that memorandum of agreement? What are some of the things that we may not get to tap into as a city when it comes to public safety?
Well, we've alluded already to some of the databases, and I'm not an expert on that, so I'm just telling you what I've been heard both from the mayor and from the chief of their concerns. There's potential we're going to lose access, immediate access to things like the National Fingerprint Database, to the Sexual Assault Database, to DNA Database. I've not seen it, but I believe you're going to see in the mayor's argument, ballot argument opposed to Prop 205, you're going to see all those areas where he believes we will lose access on the federal side, which will make it more difficult to keep this community safe. The chief of police, it's as much about the collaboration and sharing of information that he's afraid that will be lost to the city, that will make both investigations and operations difficult. One of the keys that makes our country as safe as it possibly can be is the collaborative nature of the effort between the federal law enforcement, the state law enforcement, and the city law enforcement. And by putting this clause in there, while the onus will come on the feds to sign it, you are putting the Tucson Police Department in a position where they are going to be restricted or limited in what they can do to investigate, to and to prevent crime and get truly the bad people, regardless of their status. So there's a lot of citizens inside this town that also would benefit from having the loss, and that's citizens with bad intent, would benefit from the loss of those relationships we have with the federal authorities. The chief's real clear. The general orders and the relationship we have that his department has currently with Custom Border Patrol as well as ICE and others is what allows them to use the general orders as they are in place. And that is a very unique thing. You realize if those relationships are broken or severed because there's no agreement, now CBP potentially is going to know we don't have the support of Tucson Police Department because it's prohibited, because we don't have a memorandum of agreement, and there's potential that actual activity, they're going to have to refocus where their efforts are. And right now, with the strength of this community, is those relationships. Kind of small point, but there was a video that the pro campaign put up that showed why they believe this needs to be in place. It was a scene that CBP officer came along, realized that there was some criminal activity, so called TPD to come in, and TPD came in, took over, and told CBP, thank you for your help, support, you can go now. Diffused the situation from being an immigration issue and turned it into what it was. So those relationships, you really can't overemphasize the strength of them. This threatens it. Again, a solution looking for a problem. These problems that they highlight just don't exist.
Ted Maxwell, President and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. If you can stay for another few minutes, the one thing that we didn't get into was the funding. And I think this is one that I hear a lot of back and forth on. I think we'd appreciate a little bit of clarity on what exact funding would we be at risk of losing? How does that work? Because a lot of conversation stays at kind of the national and federal level. I've heard a lot also that is jeopardized at a state level. If you can stick around for a few more minutes, we'll come back after the break and finish out that way.
Absolutely. At that point, I'd like to also hit on why this being a citizens initiative makes this even more concerning.
We'll hit that when we come back from the break. Tucson, you are listening to the Creative City Show here on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to a per usual rapidly passing hour here on the Creative City Show. You're with me, your host, Zach Yenser, on the program here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're wrapping up the hour with Ted Maxwell, the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. And one thing that we didn't get to, but we still have some time to from the last segment, is I want to dig into the weeds a little bit, because there are weeds to dig into. And our listeners know that when they listen to our show, they're going to get a continuing education unit for whatever we talk about. So it's okay. We can do that. It's funding. And I want to get into it because at the national level, Donald Trump has at least threatened or tried or attempted to pull federal funding from sanctuary cities. At almost every turn, it's been ruled by the courts as unconstitutional. So one of the arguments that I've seen and heard from the pro campaign is that, hey, this is all hubbub. We're not going to lose funding. Calm down. But I think it's one of the more valid and nitty-gritty issues. I know from preparing for this conversation, from hearing you and others in the past, you have concerns, as is mayor and council, about us losing state funding and so on and so forth. Can you get into the weeds a little bit with us about what that loss of funding could look like? Because I think this is one of the big pushbacks from the yes on to the no on.
Absolutely, Zach. And before which you're probably going to go, come on, we've got limited time. Before we dive into the weeds, I want to make one thing clear about the Sanctuary City and it being a Sanctuary City initiative. Sanctuary, at its core, is a good word. It's feeling of safe. It's feeling of comfort. You're in a good place. I think everybody agrees that having a place where people can find sanctuary is outstanding. Sanctuary City is a term that is not defined. So there are sanctuary counties, there are sanctuary cities, there's all these things, but there's very little definition behind it. So this is not an initiative about whether Tucson should be a sanctuary city or not. This is an initiative about this sanctuary proposition, which is going to be bad for the citizens, the immigrants, regardless of status, of the city, and ultimately, because the city is the core of our region, of the region. So it's not about a definition of whether we should be a sanctuary city or not. It's about what the actions will be. I've actually heard the pro side say, it really doesn't matter what the impacts of this are. We just need to declare we're a sanctuary city. And that is that should not be the case, because you're going to put the city at risk for not only loss of funds, but for public safety on a political argument. This is a nonpartisan issue. This is absolutely a nonpartisan issue. That's why the Democratic leadership in this city, the elected leaders, are all unanimously opposed to it. So, on some of the funding issues, you're right about the federal grants, and I'm going to be the first one to tell you, the federal grants may or may not go away. The chief is very concerned about his $11.2 million he received in federal grants, in part because of the joint operations. So there's a definite strong belief some of those grants will go away when they are prohibited or limited in their ability to conduct joint operations with the city or with the federal agencies. So what does that $11.2 million fund? This is straight from the chief's talking points. Narcotics investigations. It also funds Spanish-speaking detectives for sexual assault and domestic violence investigations. I don't even have to go any farther than the first two, because both of those two, if we lose the funding, are impactful. And they're impactful for those people that the pro people are trying to protect. So $11.2 million in federal grants for direct to the department. There's also another $10 million in grants through the judiciary side of the federal government that comes into the city of Tucson. So that's another $10 million. So that's $20 million. But the big fear of loss of funding for the city comes in the name of the shared state, the state shared revenue. And what people are going to miss is, one, this is not money you can come back later. If the state attorney general, who only needs a single state legislature, single one, inquiring that he investigates, if the state attorney general determines we're violating state law through an action, an ordinance, a law, anything, and what people got to remember, the city council has to, based on a city initiative, make this law. So the council ultimately makes it law because they pass it. It doesn't become law the moment the citizens pass it. The council has to take actions. It's just like when the ballots are submitted, the council has to put it on the ballot.
And all candidates have said if they are in position, they will support the will of the people. They've not said they'll fight it. Regardless of their belief on the front end, they won't fight it.
And there's a legal position where they have to turn it into law because it's an initiative. But once legislator state attorney general finding, and again, we've already talked about the city attorney says it's in violation of state law, then instruction of the state treasurer to withhold state shared revenue. Now, we get $197 million in shared state revenue. Some of it is protected. The road money, HERF money, some of those, it's not going to go away. But what's at risk is our fair share. And the reason I say our fair share, this is taxes all the citizens of Arizona have paid, income tax and state sales tax, that are then put into a shared state revenue pie and distributed to all the municipalities as a way of sharing this state revenue. If the state treasurer then withholds it, what happens to that money? $125 million that would be withheld. And that it's an estimate between 120 and 130.
I mean,
so
they're not
cutting the middle.
They won't sit on it.
When they withhold it, no, it's by law. What they have to do with it, Zach, is distribute it to all the other municipalities. So everybody else will get more, including all the municipalities in Phoenix. So the $125 million that's supposed to come into Tucson's general fund, and remember, the general fund's really the only discretionary money that the city has. The general fund, $125 million, is going to go to other portions of the state. And even if we fix this, which you pointed out earlier, requires a vote of the citizens. So assuming all these things that we are concerned about actually occur, and we're pretty confident they will, especially on the fiscal side for the shared state revenue, the only way we can undo it legally, if it's not overthrown in the courts, because there will be a lawsuit, there will be federal city money spent defending a lawsuit, if it's not overthrown in the courts as being illegal, will be for another vote. So when can we do that? It's going to take time. It doesn't have to be a citizen's initiative. The council and mayor could refer it to the ballot, per se, but it has to be a vote of the citizens. So if, as the pro campaign made in the Stellar article, it really is not going to change anything, then why do it? The reason is they want to make a political statement. And this is a nonpartisan issue. You're going to see both sides, both of the extremes, let's call it that way, my opinion, both of the extremes will try to make this an argument about some of the other issues we've talked about. This proposition will have bad effects for public safety and for the finances in the city of Tucson. It will not address the problems our country has with immigration policy. It will not address the argument on a border wall. It will not address anything else that you're going to hear people talking about all the time. Because it's not fixing anything. We have a very welcoming city and town. We have a police department that is doing everything they can to make a city welcoming and friendly. And this will overturn a lot of progress that the city of Tucson has accomplished in this regards.
Ted Maxwell, CEO and president of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. We've got a couple of minutes left. Obviously, the yes on this proposition have been hard at work for months. Anything that Tucson should expect in terms of seeing, we've already started to see some, but is there going to be any kind of no on this proposition that we should watch out for in the next couple weeks or months or whatever the case may be?
There is a political action committee that has been filed, and it's the No on 205 campaign. The co-chairs are Yvette Marie Margian, and I may have mispronounced her name in that respect, and also Larry Lucero. Larry is a prominent Democrat inside the city of Tucson. He's pretty well known. Matter of fact, Tucson Man of the Year has been recognized as Tucson Man of the Year in the last 2 years. And they understand the impact that this may have on the city. And they're taking leadership, joining the mayor, joining the council, and trying to get the message out. And the message is going to stay focused on the facts. It's not going to become a partisan debate. It's not about federal positions on issues. It's about what is good for the city of Tucson. And I think you're going to see more from that organization soon.
Ted Maxwell, thank you for your time today. And I think we gave equal time to both sides of this issue over the period of a couple months. So listen back if you missed anything. Thank you for your time.
And I appreciate the work you're doing. Appreciate the work you're doing, Zach.
Tucson, that does it for us today on the program. Come on back tomorrow, 9 a.m. for more of the Creative City Show. Take care.